The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet.
This episode of the Steve Austin Show is sponsored in part by BetOnline.ag. Check it out. We're right in the middle of baseball season. Are you looking for a place to make your online wagers? Then head to BetOnline.ag to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Use promo code PODCAST1 to receive a 50% sign-up bonus today. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. The Steve Austin Show is also sponsored in part by DDP Yoga. Hey, I did my very first DDPY workout with Dallas back in June, and I was blown away by how much I loved it. I made a commitment to stick with the program for a few months, and I'm still going strong. I've been doing my regular workouts with the DDP Yoga Now app, and I'm definitely feeling the difference. I'm definitely feeling more flexible, definitely starting to put together some core strength. If you really want to see the power of DDPY in action, you have to watch Dallas's new real-life reality series, We Can Rebuild You. Dallas has been working with disabled veteran Jerry Cameron, whose only goal is to be able to walk again without his walker. So far, Jerry has gone from barely being able to get out of a chair to doing some of his DDPY workouts without needing his walker at all. You can follow Jerry's progress at ddpyoga.com/rebuild. Have you been looking to get on board with DDP Yoga? Well, there's no excuse not to, because Dallas has given you 7 days free to try it out. Listen, that's a week to try the program. Explore the app. Own your life, and it's completely free. You just got to give it a chance, folks. DDP Yoga can work for all ages, all weights, all fitness levels. It is a kick-ass cardio workout that will dramatically increase your flexibility and strengthen your core like never before, all with minimal joint impact. Just for listeners of the Steve Austin Show, you can save 25% off all DVDs and annual memberships for the DDP Yoga Now app during the DDPY Labor Day sale. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Austin to take advantage. Check us out. Dallas has some awesome workshops coming up, including the biggest DDPY workshop ever at All In Weekend on September 1st in Chicago, Illinois, as well as Toronto, Canada on September 22nd. Get all the info at ddpyogaworkshops.com.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the mean streets of Los Angeles, California today. I'm sitting here at 317 Gimmick Street at my podcast table. Got my laptop computer on the table, got a ceiling fan on. The weather has cooled down real nicely. I got everything opened up, and it is a beautiful day in Southern California. But tomorrow, I'm fixing to haul my ass out of here and head down to Nevada. Spend a couple of days at the Broken Skull Ranch 2.0 and then make my way over to my brother-in-law's house over there in the Sparks area, where I will begin my antelope hunt on September 1st, and we'll be out there for as long as it takes. Maybe it'll take 1 day. Maybe it'll take 2 days. Maybe it'll take 3 days. Maybe it'll take 4 days, and on and on and on. Seems like my brother-in-law says he's got the Jack Daniels covered. So I'm going to leave my Broken Skull Ranch margaritas and all my supplies at the crib, and we'll be drinking Jack Daniels once we get off the damn mountain and get through hunting. I am looking forward to spending some time with my family. Looking forward to getting out there in the woods. We're going to be taking our four-wheelers out there. I'm going to have my Brute Force 750. I got to put a little gun rack on it, get a case for my gun, pack up all my shit. I am looking forward to getting out there and getting my hunt on. So here we go. Hey, today on the podcast, I got Ted Fowler 361. I called Ted the other day. I said, hey, man, I said, I'm trying to get ahead of the curve here. You got anything you feel like talking about doing a podcast with me? He goes, hell yeah. So, man, it's about a one-year anniversary, give or take, since Hurricane Harvey hit the Gulf Coast region and slammed right in to Rockport, Texas, where Teddy's from. And miraculously, all of the leaves were blown off all of his trees on his 3 acres over there. But his house didn't lose one shingle, didn't get one window broken. He had to board up his door with a bunch of boards to keep the damn thing from flying open. Him and his dogs hunkered down, and they weathered the storm, no pun intended. They made it through, and it scared the shit out of him. So we go back, we talk about the rebuilding process in Rockport, and then y'all send in some questions to my Twitter account, or my email account, rather, questions@steveaustinshow.com, and we answer some of those questions. And, man, we're just kicking back, drinking margaritas, drinking Jack, and having a conversation. So it's a lengthy conversation, so I'm going to get on right into business, roll the podcast. But before I get to Ted Fowler, listen up. The sports betting scene is currently hotter than it's ever been. And the best part is that our friends at Bet Online have partnered with us here at Podcast One Sportsnet to get you in on the action. These are our go-to guys, the guys we trust for all things betting, lines, odds, wagers, inside info, you name it. And wouldn't you know it? Football season is coming up fast. If you want in on some of that sweet NFL and college football action, then betonline.ag is your main destination. I'm talking to Dave Mason from betonline.ag about the world of betting, something that I bet every now and then, but I never know anything about the odds, the percentages, plus, minus, how all this stuff happens. So Dave is here to explain a little bit of the process to smarten a brother up. Dave, good to have you on the show. How are you?
Hey, great to be here. Real excited. College football is kicking off this week. Yeah, there was a little kickoff last week with a few games, but they weren't too significant. So we got a full slate this weekend. So things are, we're churning out the odds down here at betonline.ag. We're ready to rock.
Hey, man, it's good to have you guys part of the podcast and a part of Podcast One and all that stuff. But, man, as long as I've been alive, I'm not a real big betting guy. But I'm always very interested in seeing what the lines are just because I don't understand it. So, hey, break that down for me and tell everybody what you guys do, how you do it, and go about the process, and smarten me up.
All right, I'll try. You're asking the wrong guy if I'm trying to smarten you up, but I'll try. All right, since college football is here, we'll talk specifically about college football. Yeah, I mean, the odds, you know, the most popular way to bet college football is the point spread. And what the point spread is, it's basically one team is favored over the other. So one team is better than the other team. So we give it that better team should win by a certain amount of points. Let's talk about like Louisville, Alabama. They play Saturday. Bama's the defending champs. We have Alabama 24.5-point favorites over Louisville. That means if you bet on Alabama, they have to win by 25 points or more in the final score to win your bet. If you bet on Louisville and they win by 24 or they lose by 24 or fewer or win the game outright, you win your bet. So that's the point spread. Then you got money line, which is a game to who wins the game outright. So something like West Virginia versus Tennessee. West Virginia's a minus 380 favorite over Tennessee. So you'd have to lay $380 to win $100. But if you're on the other side, Tennessee, you get plus 320. So you would only have to risk 100 to win 320. And then the other popular way is the over under or this or the game total, which is the total amount of points both teams will combine for in the game. So once again, let's take Michigan Notre Dame. That's the biggest game on Saturday, and they have a total of 47. So you can either bet that the game will go over 47 points or under 47 points. So those are the three most popular ways to bet on college football.
Man, how do you guys go about creating these numbers or these lines?
College football, we have a few different consultants. We open our odds earlier than anybody. So, you know, Sunday afternoon, on a typical Sunday afternoon when the NFL got or when there's some games going on, we open up the college football for the following week. And we let our bettors bet that before they can bet it anywhere else. So we will open up for smaller limits. We have a few consultants that give us those numbers. We open for smaller limits, and then the action comes in, and we move the numbers accordingly. And by, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, those numbers are pretty sharp and they settle. They'll move a lot. So I always advise people to pay attention to those early numbers Sunday afternoon.
So when these guys are making up these numbers or coming up with these numbers, I mean, obviously these guys have to study the game of football and the programs of each team that all the teams that are playing, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they have computer programs and everything that's spitting out numbers for them. So, you know, they might not really know everything about. You know, I look at one game on the betting board here, Old Dominion Liberty. They might not know everything about these teams, but
no disrespect to Old Dominion Liberty,
right? But they have computer grow programs, so they get a pretty good number. But you know, that's the thing with college football is those are the kind of guys that beat us. The guy that knows a lot about Liberty or Old Dominion, you know, some graduate who knows football good, knows math good, and knows Old Dominion inside and out. Those are the kind of guys that beat the heck out of us. That's why, you know, those are the most successful bettors, are the guys that are specialists in either a sport or a team or a conference, et cetera. So, you know, that guy's going to know more than our computer guys. So that's why we open the limits lower and they get higher as the week goes. So it's kind of, you know, we'll let him bet that early, but as the number sharpens up, that's when the limits really go high. So he might win some money off us, but he's not going to win as much money because by the time our limits are high, you know, the all the value in the number's already gone.
So with BetOnline.ag, do you guys cover every sport under the sun, or is it like strictly football, baseball, basketball, kind of like the bigger sports?
No, the bigger sports are we're U.S. facing sports books. So yeah, football, basketball, baseball, hockey are the biggest. But no, man, we follow everything, and you know, team handball, snooker, rugby, all these Euro sports that I know next to nothing about, cricket. So don't have me talk about cricket, please. But yeah, we cover everything, and entertainment, politics, you know, odds on a 2020 election, everything under sun. If it's any kind of competition, there's going to be odds on it.
So I'm guessing MMA, right?
Oh yeah, big MMA. I'm a big MMA guy. I love the sport. It's my favorite sport to bet.
Okay, hey, listen, talk real quickly about the impending upcoming match, if it happens, fight between Brock Lesnar and DC, Daniel Cormier, the light heavyweight champion of the world.
Yeah, I hope that happens. Yeah, we opened the odds up, and we have DC at a minus 275 favorite. So once again, you'd have to risk $275 to win $100, where Brock Lesnar is the plus 235 underdogs, where you would risk 100 and you would profit $235. So we got DC as a pretty big favorite. There's gonna be a huge size differential, of course, but DC's so good, man. And you know, Brock's just would come back for that one fight, I think, just a huge payday. So who knows what training he's been under for to fight MMA. And I know DC's just such a professional when it comes to MMA. So despite the size differential, DC will go off as the big favorite if that fight happens, and I really hope it does.
You know, the thing about it is I'm friends with both guys, and DC is incredible. You know, his Olympic background, the two titles, never failed a drug test. So I just really love that guy. But when I think about Brock Lesnar, when he enters that octagon, he brings this X factor. I know that DC, they're both wrestlers, but I think DC's obviously a higher level wrestler. And Brock has that otherworldly athletic ability. I always call him a freak of nature. There's not too many human beings that are like Brock Lesnar. So anytime he enters a fight, whether it was with Frank Mir or any of the other guys he's fought, well, you know, the short one with Cain Velasquez when Cain kind of took him to town. But you just never know what you're going to get with that guy. But to me, that's going to be a super fight. I just think everybody's going to go through the roof. It's going to be one of the biggest pay-per-views, in my opinion, that there's been probably since the Conor McGregor. Well, that was boxing, McGregor Mayweather. But hey, dude, how did you guys do on that fight, McGregor Mayweather?
We cleaned up. We cleaned up. Everybody was on McGregor for whatever reason. I mean, the people that bet Mayweather got the deal of the century, because I mean, that should have been, you know, we opened that like minus 2000, but so many people were betting on McGregor. You see, in fights, most of the public bets on the underdog, so we're usually rooting for the favorite. So those numbers just kept on. There was so much action coming up. That was the biggest day for signups in the history of our company. There were so many people coming to the site that day, more than any other event, any other day. So that was such a huge day, and everybody's betting on McGregor with those plus 400 odds or whatever it was. So yeah, we did real well.
You know, I was just thinking, hey man, McGregor's got a fighter's chance, and I just figured he's going to hit him with just some kind of big ass right or left hand and knock Mayweather out. Obviously that didn't happen. You know, many people thought, you know, Mayweather kind of carried him for a big part of the fight. So I don't know what happened, but we saw what the end result was. But nonetheless, it was an interesting fight. Hey man, how long has BetOnline.ag been around?
Oh boy, we're going on 20 years. So yeah, the management here has been there for about 20 years. So we've been around forever. We're still growing. You know, we were a smaller book for a while. And then about the last 8 years, we really took off. So we're getting bigger every year. So keep on making improvements to the site. So yeah, we're here to stay.
Well, how long have you been involved in this, and has betting and sports and all the odd stuff been a passion of yours since you've been a kid?
Oh yeah, I was a big sports guy growing up, and I was half decent at math, so I always got into the odds and that kind of stuff and stats and all that stuff. I always loved that stuff. So it was just kind of natural for me. I've been involved since about 2004 in this industry. So I've been around for a while and I love it.
Man, you got me interested in betting now. So tell me and the people listening to the show how they get involved and using betonline.ag. I read the copy all the time, but give me the 411 from you to me.
Head on over to www.betonline.ag and sign up for an account. We take credit card, Bitcoin, all sorts of ways to fund your account. And once you're funded, there's all sorts of bonuses, including Podcast One promo code, and then get your account funded and go from there. 50% sign up bonus. So, you know, you deposit $100, use the promo code, and we'll put an extra $50 worth of free plays on top of that.
Is this a pretty easy process? If I sign up, I'll be able to walk through this thing pretty easy without any problems.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you do hit a glitch or something, you know, you can always follow me on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL, or call our customer service number. We'll hit up one of our customer service agents on chat and go from there, and we'll get you set up.
I've been hitting the head with so many steel chairs, sometimes it's hard for me to understand all the processes. I'm kidding you, Dave. But if I run into any problems, I'll give you a call and give you a follow over on Twitter. But hey, man, it was good talking to you. I appreciate the quick tutorial on betting. Man, I'm 53 years old. I've been into sports my whole life. I played college sports. I was, well, in the game of pro wrestling, which I don't think y'all cover. But it's interesting to understand the dynamics of betting now. How are you covering pro wrestling?
We have odds for it. Not every week, but I'm telling you, we do have odds on it on the big events like SummerSlam and WrestleMania and all that stuff. We do have, you know, we do have odds. We do.
Like I can every bet other on pro podcast. Wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, the odds, you know, the limits aren't super high. It's not like you're going to be able to bet $10,000 like you would on a college football game, but we'll let you get down for a little bit of money and watch your professional wrestling and root for your side you have a bet on.
You know what? Here's a quick story for you as it pertains to betting. A long time ago, we were running Phoenix, Arizona, and we go to Phoenix, and this is when I was World Championship Wrestling, and we got to the building, and the ring crew had brought the wrong set of ropes, so the ropes would not fit the ring, so they canceled the show. So I go back to my hotel, and I'm like, man, you know, I got a whole night to myself. It wasn't like I was cruising to nightclubs. So I went to the front desk. I said, hey, man, what do y'all do around here for entertainment? And I said, well, the dog racing track is right down the block. So I said, all right, I'll go check out the dogs. So I was sitting there. They released the dogs. They're running around the track. And I'm like, yeah, this is okay, but it ain't all that. And then I figured, well, let me place some money on a couple of these dogs. Dude, as soon as I put some money down, it wasn't a lot of money, but as soon as I put some money down, I was really invested in that dog race then.
That's right.
So, man, I was drinking my beer, and I was doing trifectas, you know, all the little things that you do.
Yep.
And, man, I had an absolute blast. I was hoping they'd forget the ring ropes for a couple of more shows. But, yeah, when I put my money on the line, because I'm such a cheapskate and I'm such a sore loser, mister, I was cheering for my dog. And it really I'm not telling everybody to go bet if you've got a problem, but god dang, dude, I'm going to bet on pro wrestling because I'm going to check out the football stuff too, but with respect to as much as I follow the business of pro wrestling, I'm basically, you know, trying to use my knowledge to figure out storylines much more so than, you know, a true outcome from a sporting event. But nonetheless, I'm very intrigued, and I'm happy to be working with you guys, and I'm going to sign up, and, you know, I might get into a little college football action because I'm such a hardcore college football fan. I'm going just off the top of my head. I'm looking at Bama to repeat as national champions. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, they're plus 200 to repeat. So you're not alone. They're taking the third most bets to win the national championship this year after Clemson, Ohio State. They're the only teams getting bet more. Plus 200. Is that good value or not? Yeah, probably is. Kind of says that they have a 33% chance of winning it all. And if you looked at the recent history, they probably do have better than a 33% chance of winning it all. So I can't fault you for betting that.
Well, man, hey, it was good talking to you, and I look forward to signing up and getting involved, man. I appreciate talking to you, Dave. Good luck to you guys.
Thank you so much.
Head over to betonline.ag and use promo code PODCAST1. That's PODCAST and the number 1 to receive a 50% sign-up bonus today. One more time, betonline.ag, and use promo code PODCAST1 to start winning with your online sportsbook experts.
Hey everyone, it's Scott Braun and Kelly Nash from MLB Network here with our new show, Baseball and Chill, exclusively on Podcast One Sportsnet.
Kick back with us each week as we cover all of the action on and off the diamond with player interviews and in-depth storyline analysis of what's happening in Major League Baseball.
Relax with us every Tuesday on Baseball and Chill right here on Podcast One. Download and subscribe to new episodes exclusively on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app. Also, rate us, leave us feedback. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, we would.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
God damn, we're rolling sound. I'm at 317 Gimmick Street. I got my buddy Ted Fowler, 361, on the line. He's down in Rockport, Texas. It's been about a year after Hurricane Harvey landed over there and tore all the shit up. Teddy, how are you today?
Dude, I am good. I am good.
Hey, let's don't lie to the people. We just did this shit for 30 minutes and shit to bed.
All right, I am better than we were 30 minutes ago.
Well, I am too, and here's why.
I blew out my flip-flop. Stepped on a pop.
Cut my heel, had to cruise on back home. There's blues in the blender, and soon it will render that frozen concoction that helps me hang on. Wasted away to get a Margaritaville. All right, let me take Jimmy Buffett down a few notches. Good to have you here, Jimmy. That's bullshit. He's not actually here. That's from my iPhone. I don't want to get sued by Jimmy Buffett. He's got hundreds of millions of dollars, and I don't need to be in a lawsuit with him. Goddamn, Teddy, you doing okay?
Yeah, dude, I am doing good. I'm doing good. Man, you got to be amped up. You're getting ready to go on your antelope hunt here shortly.
Dude, I am psyched. I'm stoked. I just want to go to my house in Nevada. I want to open my safe, and I want to see my 7 mag in the safe, not at the fucking police station and not on the damn table at the gun range where I was trying to get it all dialed in. You know, I was thinking about it, Teddy. You know, I was thinking about, okay, you took your gun to the shooting range specifically to shoot and dial it in. And then you promptly left your gun at the shooting range. So I kind of made like an analogy or whatever you would call it. It'd be like if I drove my truck through the car wash and walked home.
Dude, you are the reason why they have those stickers on the outside of Walmart that said, hey, did you leave your kid in your car?
and that's serious business right there. Before we laugh about it, that is serious business.
No, you're right.
And dude, you know what I did was, you know, the dudes that always open stuff up, a lot of times it's a janitor. You know, they got the keys on the end of that retractable thing.
Yep.
So now, from now on, when I take my gun out, I've got it attached to my retractable gimmick on my belt line, so I don't forget that motherfucker.
Dude, how do you go to a shooting range, shoot your gun, get done, and stand up and go, what? How did I get here? Let's go back to the house and forget what you carried there to do.
Dude, I swear to God, you know, I was down there, and dude, I am super OCD about guns, and you know that. And this isn't a rebroadcast of a podcast a couple weeks ago, but I've told this story, man. I'm such a stickler for gun safety and just responsibility and
right.
Everything that comes with the ownership of a gun. You know, the right to have a gun, I take it very seriously. And for me to go off and leave that somebody laying on a table, I was embarrassed. It was a brain fart, dude. I've never done that in my life. But then, dude, I had to own it. I went down to the sheriff's department and told him what was up. And sure enough, a dude had found my gun and turned it in. So, again, one more props to the guy that found my gun and was honest enough to turn it in, because it wasn't the fact that I'd, you know, that's a very sentimental gun to me. When I was hunting down there in South Georgia, you know, I had stopped deer hunting when I got in the wrestling business because I didn't have time to hunt. Then me and Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff started riding together, and he goes, do you hunt? I said, well, I quit hunting because I don't have time to. He goes, oh, come hunting with me. and he's the one that suggested the 7-mag caliber.
Oh, shit.
And I've always been a Remington guy, so I built that Remington 700, put the muzzle brake on it. One of my buddies from Alabama, when I was down here hunting around the Selma area in Dallas and Lowndes County, painted camouflage for me. So that's a very sentimental gun to me. And I can go buy another 7-mag, but I can't replace that one. And more importantly than that, there is a gun on the streets with my name on it because I was stupid enough to leave it there. So that was, I was shook up on so many different levels about that, Teddy, but it'll never happen again. And, you know, take responsibility for my actions. It was what it was. But to your point, dude, like I said, it'd be like driving your car to the car wash and then walking home. Well, fuck, I forgot my car at the car wash. That's how stupid that was. And I feel like an idiot about it. But, dude, to answer your question, I am stoked about getting ready to go to Nevada and go antelope hunting. I'm going to leave on Wednesday. Kristen and I and the dog's going to drive up there, and I'm going to go back to the shooting range. I want to, dude, here's what I was doing. When I sighted in that day, I was dead on at 300, and I listened to Mitch talk about his hunting trip with Bree, and she took her antelope at about 375 yards, and the one Mitch took was a stud antelope at 83 inches. He was out there pretty good ways too. So I think I'm gonna dial back down to shooting dead on at 100, and I think I'm just gonna range it myself and add elevation. Because when I went on my mule deer hunt and I'd sighted in for a 300-yard shot and I was presented with a 184-yard shot, I ended up shooting a little bit high, drilled him, but shot high. So I'm going to go back to shooting range and put some more trigger time in and dial back down. What do you think about that?
Dude, what are you doing for a rangefinder? You using it off of the Leicas that we have?
Oh, yeah. You know, we got those, the Trenovid. It's a 10-power binocular, and it ranges out to about 1,500 yards. So, yeah, I'm still using that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of slippery slope because you're looking at antelope thinking it's going to be a long ways out, and you gear up for a 300-yard shot, and then you're, you know, half that. It's like, you know, it catches up on you, and checking your range is, that's paramount. Yeah.
Well, I always check my ranges. I didn't mean to cut you off, but, you know, again, like I said, man, dude, I'd rather, you know, elevate myself rather than be dialed in at a long range. I don't think I'm going to be presented with 150 or 200 or 250-yard shot. I think it's going to be greater than that.
Right.
But I'd just rather add it myself. And, dude, you've been antelope hunting. I haven't, but I've been hearing the stories from Mitch. So I know kind of what I'm in for. And the antelope is a real interesting animal because it doesn't really stand still. They dance around, they walk, they're nervous. You know, they don't sit there and be still like, say, a whitetail or a mule deer.
Dude, what grain of bullet are you pushing out of that 7?
Dude, I was looking for like a 120-grain bullet because I'm shooting my 7-mag, and I considered taking that 308 like we had talked about on the last podcast.
Right.
I think I'm running it's a 129-grain ballistic tip, and it's Hornady, like we were shooting at the Broken Skull Ranch in Tilden. It's a 129-grain bullet, probably screaming out of there, I don't know, 3,700 feet per second.
I was going to say that thing would be going like a scalded cat, man. That should be a flat shooting son of a gun. I mean, if you get it, if you're dialed in at 300, I would think, you know, anywhere from 200 to 400, you are, you know, showtime. That thing should be, you know, should be hauling butt.
Dude, I'm looking forward to it. We're going to get down there. And he guided Bree on a great hunt. He guided himself. Right now, I hadn't been in contact with him because he's been out in Gerlach by Burning Man and guiding a guy down there. And we're going to be in a unit that's right there, really, by his house. Now, when I say by his house, we're going to be 30, 40 miles from his house, but that's how big the units are. So we're going to be staying at his house. The accommodations will be Kush, be able to drink margaritas and whiskey, and, you know, go out there and hopefully we have good luck. And it'd be neat to try to take something within the first couple of days because I got a lot of work to do at the ranch. I don't know how many days I can spend out there, but I'm fortunate to get a landowner tag, so I'm going to make the most of it.
Yeah, that's a good deal, man. It should be a good hunt, man. I am jonesing to get drawn for an antelope, you know, or a mule deer hunt out there in Nevada. You know, it'll happen.
Dude, good luck on getting drunk. I'll keep the word on the street to get a landowner tag just like I got, because when Mitch came across those last two, he took one and I took the other. But, dude, if we can find another landowner tag, I'll snag up one of those. And, you know, he's got all the connections out there, because I've been putting in for the draw probably, I don't know, you've been doing it longer than I have. You haven't drawn shit. I haven't drawn shit. So I've been fortunate to have the connections that he has via the landowner tags.
Right. Dude, I've been looking at going, you know, through a guide in Montana, you know. You can go up there for a couple of grand for a couple of days, you know, and do a bow hunt on, you know, a goat. Well, you know, and I don't have any time to do it this year. You know, if I, you know, hopefully I'll get drawn next year in Nevada, because that would be that would be a goat show in itself. You, me, and Mitch up there again.
Man, you got to come out there. I know you hunted with Mitch a while back, but you got to come out there again, man. That country out there, it's awesome. Man, I've been riding my four-wheeler and my buggies and shit out there. Right down the road from BLM. And then when I went riding with Mitch, man, we went on about we put in 40 miles in just a couple hours. But that land out there is just spectacular. So you got to come out there and check. You got to get out there more.
Oh, no, I'm down with that. I'm down with that. You know, let my work schedule lighten up a little bit, you know, and find a little more time to relax. I will definitely get out there.
Hey, dude, I got a lot of questions, because this is kind of a show you was on a while back, but this is kind of like within the last few days or week or so, it's been kind of the anniversary date of Hurricane Harvey hitting the Gulf Coast and landing specifically right there in Rockport in your front yard and your backyard, and just tearing the shit out of that place, and along with that whole South Texas Gulf Coast region. How you guys doing out there? How's the rebuilding efforts going?
The rebuilding is good. I mean, that son of a gun come, you know, full barrel up Prairie Road. But, you know, we're doing all right, man. We're slowly but surely rebuilding. You know, the town's coming back. Grocery stores are good. Getting a couple of restaurants open here and there. You know, the main pitfall that we have incurred is a lot of the low-income housing, you know, got destroyed. So those people got displaced, you know, not a lot of workers, restaurants aren't open, you know, the labor pool is down. We're doing the best we can.
Well, dude, what's the morale over there? There's a bunch of questions here. One of the guys says, is there any light at the end of the tunnel yet, or is it too soon to say that?
Man, I think it's a little too early to say right now. I mean, I've, you know, and dude, you know me, I'm, you know, the polar opposite of being an optimist. But, you know, I have faith in the town. I mean, I love this place, and I think it will rebuild. Right now, you know, we're going through a kind of a very rough period. You know, we're doing the best we can, and you know, everybody by and large is pretty upbeat. It's just, you know, man, you get up in the morning and you think, well, you know, not you, but you know, man, I want to go to McDonald's and have a, you know, egg McMuffin or something like that. No, that ain't happening, you know. And you know, there's just those creature comforts that you're afforded in a big city that we haven't built back to, you know. But it'll come. It's all good.
Well, man, how the dogs doing?
Dude, those dogs are crazy as hell. That boxer of mine, that was the best acquisition, you know, a rescue dog. She is the sweetest, kookiest dog. And you know how them pointers are, yeah. You know, I mean, and she gets in their butt. But, you know, the dogs are good. The dogs are good.
Check this out. Yesterday, as we're speaking right now, it's Monday. Monday Night Raw is on television. I'm going to go back and check it out on my DVR. So on Sunday, yesterday, the dogs were playing in the swimming pool. We're throwing a tennis ball for them. I went in the house. And when they get out of the swimming pool, they just start going crazy out there. You know, it's all flat work, cement, concrete, and stairs. And, you know, our backyard isn't very big. And Mula kind of starts herding Callie, you know, like it's, I don't know why she's herding her. She's not a herding dog. But they just kind of start chasing each other. And so, goddamn, Callie slammed up against a set of stairs. And she was shaking in her back end, and she was kind of, you know, looked like she was in pain. She's only a year and a half old. And so, you know, dude, I'm just trying to chill out, just get ready for the week, you know, do all my shit. And Krista says, well, I really think we ought to take her to the vet. And I'm thinking, God damn. Well, this is what I'm thinking. This is not what I said.
Not what you're saying.
I'm thinking, God damn, this motherfucker says, you know, she ran to the stairs. There was roughhousing out there. She hit her ass, and now she's sore. And, you know, it is what it is. And then Krista says to me while I was thinking that, she goes, well, you know, so-and-so's dog did this, and she punctured a lung by, you know, roughhousing and blah, 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 blah. She says, well, I'm going to go ahead and take her to the vet. So when your wife says that she's going to take your dog to the vet, you know.
That means we.
Yeah. Yeah. It does mean we. And, you know, I don't want to follow a Ron White storyline, but.
All right, baby, you go ahead. I'll go sit here and talk to Teddy. Yeah, we're good.
Yeah, if I'm looking at getting any kind of favors in the next few days, I probably want to participate. Dare say I drive this ride, all of us, to the goddamn vet. So there we are. There we are on Sunday, driving to the vet. And here's the thing. When you live in Marina Del Rey, just like when I lived in Malibu back in the day, when you live in Marina Del Rey / Venice, all these motherfuckers from all over Los Angeles or California, the tourists, people on vacation, it's still summer, are going down to the beach. While they're going down to the beach, I'm trying to get out of the beach so I can get to the goddamn vet's office over there in Beverly Hills, California. Dude, we've had this same vet for, shit, I don't know, 10 years. And he is the absolute best. And there's a vet about, shit, 3 blocks from our house where we took that cat that we captured, you know,
right,
about a year ago and returned to the owner. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
So I said, you know, why don't we just take it to that vet because they were very good and they're very close. She goes, well, I'd feel better about going to Dr. Gary. And I'm like, I'm not going to win this one, so I ain't even going to attempt to fight it. I said, all right. And so I just jumped in the car after loading up the dogs, put my seatbelt on, and we drove to the vet. And I said, you know what? I'll just wait in the car while you go with Callie. They go, and about 20 minutes later, they come back. And this is right before closing hours. It's about 5:40 p.m. by the time they came out. They closed at 6. Takes Callie over to the little rock plaza thing so she can take a piss. And she says, well, she turned out okay. Nothing's wrong with her. And I'm like, pretty much what I fucking said at the house. Now, let me clarify. I didn't say that. That's what I was thinking. I said, well, that's good. Let's load him up and let's go on home. But I was thinking, goddamn, it just took 2 hours to go to this goddamn vet, get the dog checked out, and there ain't shit wrong with it. I told you wasn't nothing wrong with some bitch when it hit the brick wall. But she wouldn't listen to me then. But anyway, dude, that's how my Sunday went. But when something like that happens, Teddy, and you know me, dude, you know, we're in the same boat. I'm and you are a dog lover.
Oh, absolutely.
So my wife says we want to err on the side of caution. I gotta go. Sure. I gotta go along with the caution.
Sure. No, dude. I give you that. But that is not a discussion you are going to win, and that is not a mindset you are going to change. If she wants to take that dog to the vet to get her checked out, yes, ma'am.
But dude, yeah, when she put in the call, it was like about 4:45, and I was planning on starting, you know, drinking margaritas at 5 p.m. promptly because it was Sunday, and I figured I had, you know, worked hard enough during the week that this warranted some Broken Skull Ranch margaritas. So the margaritas start a little bit later than I would have liked, but they did start. Teddy, I'm drinking a margarita right now. I have a margarita tip for anybody out there who's ready to listen. And here's a little 411 for you if you do not know this. Remember back in the day when I was at the Broken Skull Ranch, we was making all those margaritas before we used to go hunting?
Yes, sir, I do.
Yep, and that was that pre-made stuff out of the bottle margarita mix, which I don't use anymore. I make them completely by hand now, my own ingredients, and I squeeze the limes myself. Here's my tip. Ted, you know how tight I am, and you know how to squeeze a buck too, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. So you got one of those lime squeezer gimmicks that if you cut a lime in two, you put it in like a pair of pliers type gimmick. It's got some holes cut in one side to get the lime juice out.
Dude, I know what you're talking about, but no, I'm not that bougie that I own one, but please go ahead.
Oh, dude, it's like a pair of pliers meets a vice grip. It's got a cup.
Right.
It's a divot area, so you can stick a lime in there, or half a lime, and you squeeze the first half of the lime, squeeze it till you can't squeeze no more, and then take that slice out and put it on the counter, then get the other half of the lime, squeeze the dog shit out of it, get every bit of lime juice you can out of there, then open the damn vice grip gimmick, put the other lime that you just squeezed before on top of the lime that you just squeezed, turn it sideways, and squeeze that motherfucker again. And Teddy, you'll get a cut hair more lime juice out of that lime by putting both of them in there and squeezing them together. So I know that sounds stupid as fuck, but when you're trying to maximize every bit of lime juice you have for your margaritas, that will save you a trip to the store to go get more limes.
Dude, what else you put in there besides lime juice? Is it triple sec or?
Dude, long story short, you know, I went to the liquor store yesterday. And normally, even back in the day from Broken Skull Ranch until then, we was drinking Patron Silver. So I'm still drinking Patron Silver. Lady sold me on a smooth-ass bottle of tequila. It was too smooth. I like a little bit of bite in my margarita. But anyway, basically, it's Patron Silver. It's a little bit of lime juice. And the amount of lime juice that it actually is would kind of amaze you, because you think it'd be more lime juice than I'm actually putting in them. I won't give the formula because I'm trying to perfect it right now. So it's Patron Silver, it's lime juice, it's triple sec, it's a little bit of agave nectar, and it's a little bit of Grand Marnier. And I'm going to come out with those exact measurements as soon as I dial it in a little bit more specifically than I am now. And when you're putting your Grand Marnier on the end, on fresh rocks, because you're mixing the whole mix up other than the Grand Marnier. And then once you pour it on fresh rocks, that's when you put in your Grand Marnier, so it floats down and kind of colors it down and puts a different level to it. So that's basically my formula. And I'll give you a specific formula, like I said, I'm open to the podcast on Tuesday here pretty quick. But I'm finalizing my final adjustments to have the ultimate margarita that is not made out of a machine in any bullshit restaurant and does a margarita the justice that Jimmy Buffett sings of.
Boy, that was the missing link, was that Grand Marnier or whatever the fuck you call it. Yeah, you know, yeah, I knew there was something besides triple sec, and there was, you know, something to do with grandma. I couldn't remember what the name was, at Grandma Yay or whatever. Yeah.
Man, I love Grandma Yay. I see her every time at the family reunion. I love Grandma Yay. Hey, Teddy, I got a couple of questions for you that people sent into the email.
Let her rip.
Here it is. It's from Chef Andy Conda from Wisconsin, Wisconsin Badgers, trying to put together another big season, kicking it over there in the Big Ten. What it do, players? Always good to hear Mr. 361 on the podcast. You two are hilarious. Here's the thing. I'm building an elevated deer blind, and is there a certain height and size that you guys prefer? Also, one more question. Do you guys believe there's a benefit in the hanging deer before butchering? Best of luck to the upcoming hunts for all the hunters out there. Swig of whiskey for the hunting man, Chef Andy Conda from Wisconsin. Let's talk about this deer stand, Teddy. An elevated deer blind, how high does it need to be? It only needs to be, in my opinion, higher than the trees, shrubberies, or whatever terrain you're hunting in.
Correct.
To me, I want a deer stand as low to the ground, if not on the ground, that I can get. Because you're only in a deer stand for concealment. You could basically sit on a 5-gallon bucket on a brush line in camouflage and have a gun rest or without a gun rest and be fine. The deer stand conceals your movement, conceals you. You have that freedom to move around a little bit, which everybody does. If you've ever hunted with my wonderful father, he's wavering, and Teddy has.
We got a lot of action going on in that deer blind.
My dad would blow his nose every other minute, if not sooner than every other minute. But to go back about the question, because I could talk about my dad deer hunting for an hour, and I love my dad to death. But a deer stand only needs to be as high as you need it to be to see over the terrain. If it's, you know, if you're over in the piney woods like I used to hunt in Georgia, you know, you're going to climb up in a tree stand and see over whatever you need to see. you're going to climb up in a tree stand and see over whatever you need to see. All of our deer stands at the Broken Skull Ranch, Teddy, some of them were on the ground. The others were 6 foot in the air. And a few of them, two of them, were 12 foot in the air. And they didn't even need to be that high. So, and as far as the size of the deer stand, I bought these big-ass deer stands that were 4x6. You could get 3 people in those sumbitches. We never really hunted together over the Broken Skull Ranch because we like to hunt by ourselves. To me, you want the smallest deer stand that you can fit in comfortably and be able to swing your gun around or take it in and out of the window. But to me, the economics and efficiency of a deer stand is more important. And if you want to keep warm, it's easier to warm up than a big-ass deer stand. So as low as it can be, keep it as low as it can be. Keep it as small as it can be just for efficiency and for lack of movement within the stand. What would you add to that, Teddy?
Dude, you know, a 3x3 deer stand would have been more than enough because you're absolutely right. In the big picture, we were all going to hunt together as a big group, a big party, and that never happened. Everybody hunted by themselves. The bigger the deer stand, the more you are apt to move around, and that'll knock the deer off. A 3x3 deer stand where you're just pivoting on your seat is more than enough in reality. And you know that. Dude, you're not rolling around in a chair no higher than the top of the brush. You know, that's all you had to be was the top of the brush and 3x3 where you just pivoted on your seat. And that would have been showtime because I was guilty of it, rolling around back and forth in those deer blinds. And the deer are hearing that rolling chair going back and forth, and it just, you know, it knocked you off.
You know, in South Texas, you know, in the brush country, a lot of those stands are dialed in or labeled as executive deer hunting blinds. Well, that's a fancy word. And they're pretty luxurious. Just some carpet on the ground. You got an office chair in there, and you're rolling around back and forth to window. All you need is just a small-ass space to stick your damn gun out. You need a camp stool. And if it's cold as fuck, a little place for a Mr. Buddy heater or something like that. But, dude, when I get on some of the websites, because I always look at everybody's deer stand still to this day, and you'll see these big-ass party blinds or stuff like that where you can get, I don't know, 5, 8, 10 people in. And those things are an absolute waste of money because I bought one of those. What was that one that we had down there at shit? What was that big ass thing? We put it in Titanic.
That was a Titanic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you could get, fuck it, well, it was 5x10. That's exactly what it was. It was 5x10, and it was 10 feet off the ground. And here's what happened. Only one person hunted it at a time. We were never in there partying because that's not how we rolled. We partied at the house. When we go out to hunt, as good friends as me and Teddy are, we just want to be on our own in a deer stand because that's kind of your own personal time, your own personal space. And I don't like to hunt with anybody anyway because I don't want their movement to blow my cover. So, like hunting with my dad, who I love to death, Teddy, that was out the door. Hey, you know, even my wife. Hell, I never hunted with my wife because I want concealment. I got my system, and everybody else has their system. And it's cool. If you're rolling in there, back in the day when Shawn Michaels and Keith Martin came down and we filmed an episode for their hunting show, yeah, 3 of us were in a stand. Well, actually, there was 4 of us because we had a cameraman. That was one thing, but we ain't filming hunts down there. We're actually hunting. So, dude, build the smallest deer stand you can build and build it as low to the ground as you can because, man, inevitably, as cold as it's going to get in Wisconsin, the less I have to deal with stairs or anybody have to deal with stairs and climbing up and getting out of shit for safety reasons in the dark, keep that motherfucker low.
Dude, I never saw your dossier, but I know for a fact on my dossier, executive never enters into the picture. So, you know, executive and deer blind and me, no. Smaller is better. Smaller is better.
Damn right. Let's see what we got here. Hey, Austin and Teddy Bear Fowler. Teddy Bear.
There you go. It sounds like one of my ex-girlfriends.
Me and my buddy were wondering what you think of Cain Velasquez training at the WWE Performance Center. He was only there for a day or two, so do you think it was simply to sway contractual negotiations with the UFC, or do you think he has any real interest in becoming a wrestler? Also, would Kane have the attributes to be a WWE superstar? Thanks. Love the show. Always great to have Teddy back. Curtis and Kyle from Ireland. Well, first of all, Teddy's further away from us than I am, and I'm not very close to it, but I did not know Cain Velasquez was at the WWE Performance Center. Huge MMA fan, huge Cain Velasquez fan. I have no idea what he was doing down there. I don't know if it was any kind of swaying contractual negotiations or whatever, or if he has any desires or interest to get into the business of pro wrestling. Man, as far as does Cain have attributes to be a WWE superstar? Oh, man, damn right he does. His credentials in the octagon kind of speak for themselves. He's a great athlete. His cardio is off the charts. He's kind of that quiet, understated guy. And as an MMA fan, man, I always liked Kane's fights because Kane didn't have to talk a lot of shit to me. I just knew that when Kane was going to be in the octagon, his cardio was so high, his skills were so high, he was so deadly. I mean, he's going to beat somebody's ass. So I'm a Cain Velasquez fan, but we'll see what happens out of it. I don't know if he's trying to get into business or not. Have you heard anything about that, Teddy?
No, I have not. No, I have not.
You see Cain Velasquez in the squared circle?
No, dude, I really don't, because I see him as, an MMA guy, and I mean, man, I think there's very few guys that can cross over to it. And I don't think Cain Velasquez can do it. That's my opinion.
Well, we'll see what happens, but I haven't heard any word of it. Big fan. We'll see what becomes of it. Teddy, here's one for you. Jake from Liverpool, UK sends in, my favorite show was a cracker you guys did in December 2015. Jesus Christ, that's been a long time. It was...
No shit.
He goes on to write, it was a clusterfuck of a show, and Steve gave Teddy a grilling on his love life, especially Ted's attempts at dating sites. I was hysterics. I was in hysterics listening to Ted's tales. What a guy. Anyway, just wanted an update on how wild the Tedster is running these days. All right, Tedster.
Here we go. I got a youngster that I'm bringing along. No, dude,
so you're finally dating a woman that's younger than you.
Finally dating. They've all been younger than me. This one is just...
Dude, you're a fucking fossil. You're a Cro-Magnon.
Dude, everybody's younger than me. I got one that's significantly younger than me. But it's all right. I mean, she can, with the right amount of training, she can hold her own. She's trying to keep up with me. Doing the best she can.
Are you guys in a state of relationship? Are you seeing other people? Is this a secret? Is it kayfabe? Or what's the story?
No, dude, it's pretty kayfabe.
Well, good luck to you guys. You plan on getting married?
Yeah, you don't check Mervyn's or Macy's or any of that shit for a wedding registry. None of that shit is going on. No, dude, I'm getting mine. I'm doing what I need to do. Everything is good down here in South Texas.
Dude, I don't know when I'm gonna come back to South Texas again, but if you need a best man, I mean, I know you got lots of friends down there. Dude, you go fishing with stuff like that, but if you need a brother to fly down and help you out, I'm here.
Dude, I appreciate that, but we are a long way from the tuxedo rental. Yeah.
Here's a question for you, Ted.
Yes,
my name
sir.
Is Mike, and I live in Central Colorado at 10,000 feet. I recently picked up a bow after 25 years, and I'm looking forward to getting out for my first hunt next season. My question for you both is, any advice for a new hunter? Necessary gear versus flashy extras. Hunt alone or in pairs. Much appreciated would be any advice. Keep kicking ass with the podcast. Mike over there in Fair Play, Colorado. So let's take this back. He's in Central Colorado. He's at 10,000 feet. He just got his bow back after 25 years. It's been a while. Sounds like since he shot. Any advice for a new hunter? Necessary gear, flashy gear, hunt alone or in pairs. But let's talk about the first thing. Picking up a bow. Everybody always asks me if I bow hunt, and I know Teddy does. Yep. Teddy shoots a lot more than I do. He's a lot more proficient with the bow. He's better with the bow than I am. I can hit a target, and I can shoot about, I don't know, a 6-inch circle at 20 to 25 yards. That's not very far. That's where I'm at. That's why I choose not to hunt with a bow. So, Teddy, other than the required target time to be deadly accurate to hit the target zone that you're shooting at, you're probably going to, you know, shoot at a double lung, heart, you know, take out those vitals. Target time, practice, you got to be ready. But necessary gear or flashy extras, Ted, what does he need?
Man, get a good quality bow and a good quality release. Now, you know, I'm a big fan of Expedition Archery. That's the bow that I'm shooting now and the bow that I have shot. I was a Matthews guy. I switched to Expedition. There's a bunch of them out there. Dude, Expedition is a good bow. I shoot True Fire release, you know, just a regular release, and practice. You know, that's the main thing. Is it's like our golf game, and we should probably touch on that a little later on. You know, dude, just practice and feel comfortable out to a maximum range. I mean, right now I've been shooting a bunch, and I'm comfortable out to 60 yards. You know, I wouldn't shoot a whitetail because they're a little too weary at 60, but at targets, dude, I'm solid at 60. You know, don't go for all the whistles and bells. Just, you know, go basic and get your basic skills dialed in, you know, work up from there.
Okay, necessary gear versus flashy extras. And I know if you're bow hunting, you're shooting a limited distance, or should be. But I am OCD about distance when I'm shooting anything with my rifle or whatever. I want to know the distance. And obviously with my bow, I know the distance I'm shooting because I've got a target out there is 20 to 25 yards away, and I range everything. So, but my practice, I know what I'm doing. So would you throw in, Teddy, even though it's closer range, you know, once you start getting across that 30-yard line and then in between there and 60, I'd like to know dead on what I'm shooting. So would you recommend just a very cost-efficient rangefinder?
Let me back up. With that being said, while I'm shooting arrows out to 55 and 60, I would not shoot at an animal at that distance. I would not shoot at an animal in excess of 30 yards. I can shoot target, you know, 55, 60, but I would not ethically shoot at an animal in excess of 30 or 35 yards. Now, with that being said, I've got a Vortex rangefinder, just a handheld little gimmick that, man, you talk about showtime. You pull it up, you know, you pop it, you get your distance right quick. It's got a lanyard on it where you can let it go, and it'll, you know, hang around your neck, get out of the way of the bowstring, and away you go. Yeah, you definitely need a handheld rangefinder, but once again, I wouldn't shoot at an animal in excess of 35 yards.
So definitely a thumbs up on a rangefinder.
Teddy, oh, yeah. Yeah.
Everything I've been shooting in the past has always been, shit, I guess it's aluminum arrows, but these days it's carbon has come into play. So
yes, sir.
Would you recommend aluminum or carbon?
No, carbon. Everybody's going carbon. And I've got,
and why?
There's just, you know, they're a little bit stiffer, not as much flex as aluminum. You know, it's the latest, greatest thing. Is the carbon arrows, and I'm shooting about 2.5-inch blazer vanes. You know, did you remember back in the day when we were shooting 4 and 5-inch, you know, feathered, you know, being, you know, that long ago? Now they're down to 2.5-inch, you know, just plastic blazer vanes. It's sick what they're doing. You know, the diameter of a, you know, aluminum arrow over a carbon arrow is, you know, carbon arrow is half the diameter. I mean, it shoots so much faster, so much stiffer, so much straighter, you know, and your penetration is better.
Dude, what are you doing as far as broadheads go, and what grain?
Man, I am shooting 100 grain Muzzy Rage broadheads. I'm middle of the road on the expandables. I'm not against them.
I'm just not sold on them. I prefer, you know, a three blade fixed, 100 grain. I don't have enough experience with expandables to say that's what I want to do. I've got no problem with fixed blade.
Man, the expandables are interesting. I haven't done enough research on them, obviously. And back in my days, I was shooting, you know, 100, 125 grain muzzies. I don't know which particular blade it was, but it was a fixed blade, three, and it was 100, 125 grain. And that's what I was used to shooting. And I was still shooting targets, never shot anything. But, and mainly when I'm practicing, I'm obviously shooting broadheads. But I don't know about the expandables either. They seem to be all the rage for some people. So you'd have to ask somebody probably more experienced with that than myself and Teddy. But nonetheless, appreciate that feedback and information, Teddy. Here's one from a dude. He says, hey, what's up, Steve and Teddy? I got three questions for you guys. How is Teddy's softball team doing?
They retired.
Okay. Do either one of you guys? I knew that you retired. That's why I didn't expand upon that one.
They're golfing now.
Do either one of you guys play fantasy football or fantasy sports?
No.
Me neither. What is Teddy's favorite Stone Cold Steve Austin match?
Dude, I don't think I have a favorite because, you know, we're friends. And I mean, as fucked up as this is, I'll turn on the YouTube deal and get all slopped up on Jack and Coke and just watch your videos because of the shit you do. I mean, it cracks me up. You know, I mean, we're buddies. So I really don't think I have a particular favorite. I mean, you know, I watch that thing where you're drinking with Stacy Keebler, try to give her a beer, you know, and you wound up, you know, stunning her. And then you take McMahon's daughter.
Stephanie.
Yeah, and she's out there selling cigarettes and doing that thing, and you pull it off. And, dude.
I saw that the other day. She had that tray on with a neck strap on. Yeah, yeah, and when I yanked it from her top came off.
Dude, solid rack.
I was talking on the Tuesday podcast, and I'm always on YouTube checking out all music videos, wrestling matches, the most random shit you could think of. But I saw that thing the other day with myself and Stephanie, and I always love working with her because we had such good chemistry, and she's awesome and a total class act. So, but yeah, I remember that thing you're talking about. But yeah, that was from John Dean from the mean streets of St. Mary's, West Virginia. Appreciate the question, man. And here's one from Brandon Jones. He says, Steve and Ted, did you ever play college football? If so, how does the style back then compare to the up-tempo style of today? Do you think teams need to slow things down? Teddy, you never played college football.
The ball is in your court. No, I was a baseball player.
Yeah, but do you watch college football?
No, sir.
Well, I do. And I know there's some games this past Saturday. I didn't check them out. It's kind of, you know, the Jay Brown games. Every game's important, but those weren't the important games. So I'm waiting for the season to really hit full stride and look to see what's going to happen in, you know, the Southeast Conference, the Pac-12, the Big Ten, all that shit. Man, I'm just a huge football fan. How does the style back then compare to the up-tempo style of today? Whole different ball game. Everything has gotten faster. It's short attention span theater. It's gotten so fast these days that sometimes you just want to take a breath of fresh air and say, man, slow the fuck down. But the athletes are so awesome. The programs are so awesome. It's operating at such a high level. The athletes are so talented. You're watching the best of the best in the nation. So it is what it is, and I've adapted to watching the new style. And today's athletes are bigger, stronger, and so much faster than they used to be. And talent is talent, but just the evolution of genetics has just kind of been incredible to watch since I was a kid to watching as I watch now. Do I think the teams need to slow things down? No, man, that's not for me to say. I'm enjoying all facets of the game because not everybody is running that hurry-up style, but it is a big part of it, tempo. And trying to catch teams. I hate when they try to, you know, run a play when defensive players are running off the field and all that little bullshit. But no, football is what it is. It's definitely changed since I was in the game, and it almost feels like the Cro-Mags and the Neanderthals and to the game they're playing today. So it is what it is. But I still enjoy college football. You know, that's my favorite brand of football. And so I'll leave it at that. Steve, this is Matthew from the state of Washington. My question is both for you and Ted Fowler. My question for you is, when you turned heel at WrestleMania 17, were you aware this was going to go down? Were you aware at the end of the match Vince McMahon was going to get involved and help you out? Or was it more of a last-minute thing? Oh, man, no. Man, of course, I knew. It was my idea to turn heel. Vince always likes to do something big at a WrestleMania. We didn't have anything big other than the fact that I was wrestling the one and only The Rock in the main event on a stacked, loaded-ass card where everybody got off and had a great match, one of the best WrestleManias, if not the best WrestleMania of all time, in a sold-out, record-setting Astrodome crowd. But we were looking for that big thing to set it over the top, and it was my idea to turn heel. So that was on me. I've always said I regretted it, but that was my decision, and I knew exactly what was happening. My question for Ted, have you hunted any bears or anything like reptiles? Because I was wondering if you have any experience hunting bears, or do you avoid hunting bears or reptiles? Thank you. Sincerely, Matthew. All right, Ted, that's kind of a hard-to-understand question. Basically, the dude's asking if you hunt bears and reptiles. And by reptiles, I don't know if he's talking about frogs. That's an amphibian. Lizards, alligators, crocodiles, what?
Well, dude, I have not hunted any alligators or crocodiles, but I have shot two black bears, both of them in northern Arizona, both of them archery, you know, or as we like to say, bow and arrow. little inside joke there. Yeah. Now, dude, bow hunting black bear is it's very exciting, and it's real exciting if you do it from a ground blind. You know, a lot of people do it from a tree stand. I shot both mine from a ground blind, and that adds a little more excitement when you run an arrow through those guys because you're on eye level with them. But you know, it's like we'd spoken about with shooting mountain lion. You know, that would be cool to do once, and that's about all you'd need to do if you would need to do it. I've shot two bear. I'm pretty good with that. You know, yeah, a lot of fun though, a lot of fun.
Well, dude, you were sitting there hunting on the ground for those bears. What if you had built a 30-foot skyscraper deer stand, bear stand, and shot it from 30 feet up in the air?
Dude, it would have been a lot more, you know, calm. I'll tell you, you haven't lived until you've been eyeball to eyeball with a black bear that you run an arrow through. They really don't appreciate that.
No, I was just because we were talking about the deer stands up in air and how tall do you build a deer stand. You things as low as possible. So,
yeah.
But, dude, do you eat the bear meat or what?
You know what? The first one I had, I just had it butchered regular. You know, had ground, had steak, had roast, stuff like that. I could not give it away. It's very greasy. It's not real good table fare. And then I shot the second one, and I had the whole thing turned into sausage, like kielbasa. And that was very expensive. And it was not any better table fare. So, no, I do not care for deer meat. That's why I won't shoot any more of them.
Bear meat.
Yeah.
So, do you see yourself going on another bear hunt?
No. No, not at all.
Okay.
Not unless there's strippers or hookers involved. No.
Because so often when you go on a bear hunt, there's strippers and hookers involved.
Dude, every state has their own regulations. Yeah. I can speak for Texas, and that's a no-no. But
and dude, I didn't know they had any bears in the Las Vegas Strip.
There's a couple of them. In fact, I've got their business cards here somewhere.
All right, Steve, which martial artist would you guys pick as your favorite based on favorite movies and or fighting skills? It is giving us three choices. Jean-Claude Van Damme, Steven Seagal, or Bruce Lee. Swig a Broken Skull IPA, Rob from Austria. Dude, all the way in Austria is listening to this damn show. So give me your favorite martial arts guy.
Bruce Lee.
Oh, Bruce Lee a landfall.
Yeah. Second?
Go ahead.
No, who's your second?
Oh, well, first of all, you got to go Bruce Lee, and his fighting skills or whatever I know as skills from being a total mark. dude, you know, he was a badass. He always looked like a man bucks, but the dude was big as a minute. But that wasn't what made Bruce Lee over the top, in my opinion. It was when he would hit somebody and he'd do the sound effects after.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they'd have that ISO camera right on his face as he quivered and made those sounds. Dude, yeah. That's how smart Bruce Lee was. I mean, like I said, I'm not an authority on martial arts. I'm just watching from a television standpoint way back in the day. But dude could do. He knew his shit. He was super smart, super charismatic, good looking dude, great body. But to me, it was the after effects of when he delivered a blow, or he was delivering that blow and rubbing that foot in someone, and the sound effects that came out of him from that point on. So Bruce Lee, number one, and then. It's almost a toss-up between Van Damme and Seagal because, man, Seagal was always about those busy slapping hands type thing. Just don't show a wide shot of him running because he doesn't run aesthetically great for camera. And when you go back to Van Damme, and the movie that really kicked him off was Bloodsport, you know, a couple of shades of a little bit of Bruce Lee in there, but Bloodsport had a hard time getting released way back in the day, and they held it in a can for, shit, a couple of years and finally released it, and it made Van Damme, you know, one of the biggest stars at the time that there was. And Steven Seagal was basically a teacher, and I can't remember the agent that was his main client, but that guy basically took Seagal under his wing. And when they made Above the Law way back in the day, dude, that was a groundbreaking film. He was a badass. Don't show him running. But anyway, to get to the bottom line, I got to go Bruce Lee, then I'm going to go Van Damme, and then I'm going to go Seagal.
Dude, I'm going Bruce Lee, Chuck Norris, and then Van Damme.
Well, I was sticking with the choices that they gave us, but when you bring up Chuck Norris. Yeah.
You know me, I'm a wild card, man. I go off the reservation. Yeah.
Dude, when he filmed Lone Wolf McQuade and they buried him in that Dodge Ram Charger, and he pops the top on a Coors Light, fires up that supercharged engine, just blasts out that motherfucking hole.
Dude, we'd have had a deer blind with Chuck Norris.
Oh, man. Those are our answers right there. Dude, Austria, listen to the show. Appreciate it, dude. All right, let's take a quick pause for the calls and give big ups to True Car. If you're looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with terms like MSRP. You might even know what it stands for. But what does it actually mean? The same goes for invoice, list price, and dealer price. It's enough to confuse anybody. All you're really looking for is a price that actually means something. Introducing True Price from True Car. Now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you even get to the dealership. True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of home. And how do you know if your true price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for the same car you want. And your certified dealers know this, so they set their true price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. You're also going to need some car insurance for that car. Go to GEICO.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. That's right. Save hundreds of dollars on car insurance at GEICO.com. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today. Oh, hell yeah. Football is back. And no one covers football like your friends here on Podcast One Sportsnet. We got you covered on a daily basis with the Dan Patrick Show and the Rich Eisen Show. You got that competitive spirit in you? Get the latest tips and news with RJ Bell's Dream Preview and Ross Tucker's Fantasy Feast Podcast. We also have legendary coach Jim Harbaugh on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast, and Revenge of the Jocks with Super Bowl champion Martellus Bennett. Check out all these shows and more each week on PodcastOneSports.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. All right, before we get to the rest of my conversation with Ted Fowler 361, let's ponder something for a moment. Why can a car park itself these days? but we have to drive across town to take a test drive if we want to try out a new car. And why can we get approved for a mortgage in lightning speed, but buying a new car takes an entire day? Well, our friends at Hyundai have wondered about these things and are making it all possible now with the all-new Shopper Assurance that includes transparent pricing for convenience. Because knowing the price is always better than guessing. Flexible test drive that comes to you. Custom fit to a preferred time and location for added convenience. Making it easy on you. Streamline purchase for efficiency, where you can fill out all your paperwork online. And a three-day worry-free exchange. Car buying made easier. It's possible with Hyundai Shopper Assurance. Visit HyundaiUSA.com/Shopper Assurance for all the information.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
Steve and Teddy, have you ever thought about hunting outside the United States? We use falcons to hunt. Do you think it's a good idea to use falcons? Thank you, Steve. Mohammed. Man, Mohammed, you didn't tell me where you're from, so I don't know what you're using falcons to hunt. So it's hard for me to answer that question. And obviously, man, I'm just a gun hunter. I've never used a falcon to hunt. But one of my favorite videos to watch on YouTube, just like I was saying on the Tuesday podcast, I'm watching pro wrestling, I'm watching musical acts, I'm watching hunting videos. But there's a video on YouTube, and I'll reference this in the close to the show again. But if you get on YouTube and you type in hunting wolves with a golden eagle in Mongolia, and then it kind of says Kazakhstan, KY. But if you just put in hunting wolves with a golden eagle in Mongolia, this video will come up. And there's some rhythmic, like shaman chanting in the background. It's pretty wicked music. It's a real cool video. It's about 7 minutes and 33 seconds long. Teddy, these dudes are out there in Mongolia, and they got these golden eagles, and they got these big pads on their arms, and they're riding horseback. And these eagles are highly trained, and I don't know how they train them. But, dude, there'll be a wolf out there on the plain, whether it's in the snow or out there in a dry, mountainous, rocky area, and they'll turn that eagle loose. And those things will swoop down and grab those fucking wolves. It's the damnedest thing you've ever seen. If you watch the video, I wouldn't say it's graphic, but these damn eagles are kicking the shit out of these wolves. And there's a couple of double teams on these sumbitches when these wolves get the upper hand, and they'll send out another damn eagle. And then them eagles, dude, you and I have never seen an eagle close up, Teddy.
Right, nor have I.
It's one thing, dude, when they swoop down, they make that attack, but I guess their claws are so damn strong. I don't know if they're strangling the wolf or whatever they're doing. I think they'll peck it a few times as well, but, dude, you talk about wreaking havoc. Anyway, to answer your question, Muhammad, I've never hunted with a falcon. I've only hunted with a gun. But if you check out that video, and I don't know if you're from Kazakhstan or where you're from or what region, but obviously you speak with a little bit of knowledge and information about the subject. But, man, check out that video. It's really badass. Teddy, you got to check out that video. When you watch that shit, these dudes are hardcore, man. They're riding these horses, and they're out there, and they're hunting these damn wolves. You talk about a hard way of life. And they're not out there just hunting these wolves. I don't know if it's predator control. I'm assuming it's predator control. Or if it's just, I don't know if they're going to eat the damn wolf or if it's for sport or whatever it is. But, dude, it's pretty graphic. It's a hard life, and it's pretty badass.
Dude, how big are those golden eagles? Holy cow.
Dude, they're about, I don't know, I think they probably got a wingspan of 4 to 6 feet.
Really?
Yeah, dude, when they swoop down on them damn wolves, man, they hit them. I mean, they're coming down on them, and they roll them. And then there's a close-up of one of them's talons or just those claws as they're right. Squeezing that damn wolf. It's unbelievable. I've never seen nothing like it. We were down in Nevada not too long ago, and a lot of times when those calves, there's a lot of cattle country out there in Nevada because of all the alfalfa, the water coming down off those mountains. That's big cow country and horse country. If you get in other parts of Nevada where it's just rocky, you don't have that. But there's so many cows out there. When those cows have their calves, they'll be the afterbirth that they, whatever, come out.
Right.
And those eagles will come down there and eat all that afterbirth. So you kind of get, I haven't seen one yet, but it's kind of legendary over there for you to see them. Man, those are big badass birds is all I can gather.
Mm.
So check that out. But no, dude, to answer your questions, I ain't never had no use for hunting with a falcon, but obviously these dudes do. Check out that video, though. I've been watching this thing for a couple of years, ever since I was doing low-budget movies in Canada. I've been watching this video probably going back 10 years. So check out Hunting Wolves with the Golden Eagle in Mongolia. Here's one. Steve, have you or Ted ever had an accident at the BSR 1.0 that requires medical attention? Love the podcast and really glad you brought back the Unleashed format as well. Keep up the good work. P.S., you're the inspiration of balance between working out and enjoying life. Boy, I tell you what. That's coming from Tom England over there in Westbrook, Maine. Tom, I appreciate the damn email. And I don't know about the inspiration for the balance between working out and enjoying life, but right now, I can definitely tell you I'm enjoying life.
Hey, I was going to say, I'm not chuckling because of any injury. It's the balance between, you know, working out and enjoying life.
Yeah. I'm about to put my liver in a sling.
Yeah, I got one of them on layaway through Amazon. Yeah.
I was taking a shit the other day and shit out my liver, so I decided to call 911 for the hell of it.
No. I mean, we were real fortunate out there at the ranch where nobody really got hurt. Nobody, you know, we didn't have any real serious injuries.
Dude, here's the thing. We used to mow around a couple of the tanks, as we call them. Many other people would call them ponds, water holes, or whatever. We had, shit, 5 or 6 tanks out there. And when you're in a Kubota or any kind of tractor, 100 horsepower, four-wheel drive, dragging a 15-foot batwing shredder, and you're on an incline, and you're riding that sumbitch, and you just know that as soon as you go in another hog waller, that sumbitch is going to turn over, and you're going to end up in the damn pond and drown. That's a come-to-Jesus moment. That's a damn ass-puckering moment where your ass is grabbing hold of that seat for a lower center of gravity. And we've got, you know, a front-end loader on that tractor. It's as low to the ground as you can get it for a lower center of gravity. So we never turned over a tractor. I got stuck many times when Ted would come and bring the small John Deere tractor and pull my ass out, but we never turned the tractor over. All the trash and all the debris and all the brush that we burned using diesel fuel and gasoline, it's a wonder one of us didn't go up in flames. Especially me, when we was running from that fucking flame, and we talked about this on the podcast many years ago. As I mentioned earlier in the podcast, we are extremely safe with firearms and everything that goes with it. But we never, ever had to call 911 out there for a medical emergency. We obviously had some emergencies with my dog when Hershey caught pancreatitis out there. And we took her to the vet, and the vet kicked her out, and she was able to make a full recovery. She's no longer with us, but she recovered from that. But other than that, man, Teddy, for the 10 years that we were there, all the hijinks and shit, and dude, we're safe people, but we're raising hell out there, and we're enjoying life. We're lucky that we never had any life-changing or life-threatening events.
No, we got real fortunate, you know, in that regard. And I can remember more than one occasion where I was literally standing up in the cab of the Kubota trying to offset, you know, the angle of, you know, going on the side of that berm thinking, man, this son of a bitch is going to tip over. And I mean, we're beyond leaning. I'm standing up in the cab of that Kubota thinking, boy, This is gonna be the drizzling shits if we roll this thing over. Yeah.
Dude, no, why were you standing up? It seemed like that would raise your center of gravity.
No, you know how you do that when you start leaning against.
Oh, you have against you have your downhill foot planted and you're leaning the other direction.
Yeah, and I'm standing up off of the seat, thinking, mother. Yeah, dude. I mean, literally, I am up off of the seat. You know, going against the angle, thinking, God damn, I got to get off of this hill. Yeah, did that more than once.
Dude, there was a couple of times when you mowed the south side of the duck pond.
Uh-huh.
That was the come to Jesus tank.
Oh, dude, that'll make you pucker. That will make you pucker.
Dude, there was a couple of times when Christian would call me and I'd be mowing that bank, that south side bank. And, dude, I was already sweating bullets. And she would call me, and I'm like, listen, or I'd call her. I'm like, man, if I don't show up, I'm in the fucking pond.
Yeah.
That's how steep that motherfucker was. But, you know, that, you know, with the Batwing Shredder kind of giving some grounding as well and hooked to the ass in that tractor and the front end bucket low to the ground, you know, you figure everything's going to be okay. But, dude, and here's the thing. I'm in gear one, in low, you know, with enough revs, RPMs to keep my shredder going. But, dude, I'm creeping along, and, dude, I like to mow fast. But when you're on that motherfucker, it is precarious. So, no, we never had no instances, thank God. And that was one of the things that the biggest factor in selling the ranch was the distance, 1,500 miles there, 1,500 miles back, all the work that when you got there you had to do. But just also, man, you know, we had an issue with Hershey and, you know, she had her pancreatitis incident out there and we had to take her into the vet and that was 50 miles away. And then when Shona had her vestibular disorder thing happen, you know, 50 miles away, dude, when shit starts going south and you're in the middle of nowhere, it just kind of, you're like, man, hello, McFly.
Yeah, it makes it tough.
You know, maybe I ought to get the fuck out of here. If it was just me left to my own devices, yeah, I'm cooling the gang.
Yeah.
But when you start adding everything up with the travel and everything that it was just time to go. But, dude, we got lucky, especially when you and I, our dumb asses out there growing, you know, burning that fucking trash.
Dude, I was going to say, the fact that you and I did not burn ourselves up is a small fucking miracle. Because if anything was going to happen, it was going to be with our dumb asses out there burning shit.
Yeah. Well, here's another thing. I don't know if you remember this. Well, I know you do. You and I were coming back from Tulsa, Oklahoma. We were doing the WWE Stone Cold podcast. And I said, hey, man, they're going to send a jet for me. I said, well, you want to come with me? And she said, sure. So, man, we get in this big black and red shit.
Like a couple of fucking hillbillies carrying a six-pack of beer.
I got on a pair of camouflage shorts, tennis shoes, and a Carhartt jacket. Teddy's sitting beside me. We're in the Mac Daddy of private jets. Flying from South Texas to Tulsa, Oklahoma to do a podcast. Another time I took it was over to Colorado. And, dude, you and me rolled up over there, and we did the podcast. I think I was talking to Big Show or Triple H that night. I can't remember. And then we got back in a limo, and we left that night, and we were back on that county road, which was 15 miles to the ranch. All of a sudden, I saw something piled up in the middle of the road. I said, oh, God damn, that's a fucking chain. There's so many oil trucks going up and down that road that one of them had lost their chain. And if you're in South Texas or anywhere in the world, if you're out in the woods and you can find a damn good chain that someone has lost on the side of the road, dude, that's fair game. A chain is a chain. I mean, that pull you out of a lot of the mud.
Mm-hmm.
So we pick that thing up. I said, God damn, this is a treasure. We threw it in the back of the truck and we went on back to the house. But Ted, speaking of accidents, do you remember when I got the Kubota stuck over there by Lake Tombstone like a fucking idiot? So I called you up on the phone. I said, dude, can you bring the John Deere over here and pull me out of the damn mud? Sure, I'll be right there. 20 minutes later, here comes Teddy, grabbed up a chain off the floor of the barn, comes over to pull my ass out. And this was the chain that had the bolt in it to, you know, because we had about a 10-foot section of chain and then a bolt connecting about a 5-foot section of chain. So it was about 15 foot, but the chain wasn't continuous because there was a bolt that was stuck in the middle with a nut and a washer. And that's what we was pulling. Dude, how much did that Kubota tractor, 100 horsepower, with slime or whatever the fuck was in those tires, plus a Batwing shredder, which probably weighed, I don't know, 3,000, 4,000 pounds, 2 tons. And we're using that damn John Deere four-wheel drive tractor to pull that motherfucker out of the mud. And I always figured, dude, one of our chains is going to snap. It's either going to hit Teddy as he's pulling me out in the back of the head or hit me in the damn face because something's going to shatter. Do you remember using that chain?
Dude, I do. You remember Kristen was in the Bronco on the other side of me, and there was a chain from the John Deere to the Bronco. We had a three-way tug going on. I was in the middle. Yeah, because your daughter was down there that same time.
Dude, we had so much hijinks going on there. But
You talk about a catalyst for an injury right there, but it never happened. We got you out of there. Yeah, all held by a $1.59 bolt.
Dude, when you own the ranch, and then you and I become very good friends, and all of a sudden you call up a dude, because I used to rib you unmercifully when you first came onto the ranch. We turned out to be good friends, but all of a sudden, you know, I would call Ted, and I said, dude, I'm stuck. Could you come get me? And I know that what I was doing was completely asinine, and then when you rolled up, and you were kind enough not to be shaking your head and rolling your eyes like, what's this stupid motherfucker doing? Because if I'd have been on anybody else's ranch, I would have said, dude, what the fuck are you doing out here, man?
Dude, what you got to realize, man, I'm out there by myself doing that shit. So I gave everything a real wide berth because I did not have a safety net. I didn't have a lifeline. You know, so you were doing the shit that I didn't want to do because it was too risky because I was out there by myself.
Yeah, it's always you always want to, when you're mowing, you always want to tighten everything up, mow everything. You want to get as close to that damn water source as you can.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be the shits. Oh, dude, here's a guy that writes in, Rosie. Rosie writes in, any tips on how to save money? Love the show. We got to answer this question. Teddy, you got any tips on how to save money?
Don't get married. Next question.
Teddy hit a grand slam before I even got a swing at it.
You threw me a beach ball, man. I let it rip. Yeah. Any questions on how to save money? Yeah, don't have a wife and don't have kids.
Okay, expound upon that or any other ways other than not getting married.
Dude, as far as saving money?
Yes, sir.
I'll tell you, here you go. For my business, I take a set amount every month, and I have it automatically pulled out of my business checking account. My business checking account for my construction company, not my roofing company. That's a totally different entity. But I have a set amount pulled out of my construction company that goes into a separate savings account that theoretically will cover my income taxes. You know what I mean? So if I make X amount a month, and I pull, 30% out, put it in my savings account, come tax time, my nut's covered.
I'm going to simplify this. When Teddy was in college, dude, what were you taking, accounting?
Accounting, yes, sir.
Did you graduate?
No.
Okay. So when I was starving my ass off in Tennessee, I wasn't making shit. We was making 400-mile round trips to Memphis from Nashville, to Louisville, that's $1.65 each way, to Evansville, $1.35 each way. Man, we're traveling like a motherfucker. I'm making $15 and $20 a night. If you did not have money, do not spend money. I didn't. I starved. I've been there. I did it. I know when I was growing up in Edna, Texas, when my dad, every month, he would balance our check, not ours, his checkbook. And if he was a penny off, a nickel off. Beverly! Dude, he would call my mom. And my mom would bring her checkbook in, and they would get that shit right. So, we came from a middle-class family. We
right.
never just, we were never dirt-ass poor, but we were never, ever well-to-do. We were, and sometimes it was close scraping by. But my dad worked his ass off, so did my mom. But we knew the value of a dollar. And so when I left off to junior college, I worked during the summers. I had a full athletic scholarship. When I went to North Texas State University, I had a full athletic scholarship. But money was money. I was hauling hay. I was doing landscape work, manual labor, working for the highway department, driving dump trucks, sealing roads, patching potholes, stuff like that. And, you know, to me, my old thing was back in the day, some of my most fun days ever when I first got into pro wrestling business, I wasn't making shit, was I think I was making probably $400 a week. But you can't spend, because I didn't have no credit cards, you can't spend what you don't make. So, man, I was eating Hamburger Helper every goddamn day. It was like old Clark W. Griswold's brother-in-law told him, you know, I don't know why they call it Hamburger Helper. It does just fine by itself.
Yeah.
If you ain't got it, don't spend it. And
No, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. I mean, don't live above your means.
Never, ever. And no. So I've never done that. And that's basically what my mother and father preached to me my whole life growing up. I mean, shit, we never, ever lived above and beyond our means. And a lot of people get into business or whatever, whether it's out of college. A lot of people have, you know, college loans they're trying to pay back. But, you know, you look at a gross number. If you're making X amount of dollars, you're going to pay, you know, 30, 40 to Uncle Sam. And then whatever your state taxes are. But you never spend off the gross. You spend off the net. And then you don't even spend off the net. You take a cut hair off the net that you can spend. And you put the rest in the bank. You just don't spend money.
Oh, dude. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, you look at the end result number. But you've got to realize you have obligations, you have, you know, your debt, you have taxes, you have, you know, a bunch of stuff that you have to pay for first. And then what's left over, you know, dude, there was a lot of beanie weenies ate at my crib. And it's still, it ain't like we're rolling in it. Pay your taxes, pay your debts, pay what you owe, and what you've got left over, you live, you know, in that realm. Don't go above it. Don't go above it.
Okay, Teddy, we got two more questions. You ready?
Yes, sir.
Okay, the question is, it's a short question. Ric Flair or Hulk Hogan?
1, 2, 3. Ric Flair. Man, I was a huge Ric Flair fan. Shit, I watched him tonight on YouTube. You know, I mean, that cat was solid. Not, you know, not to knock Hulk Hogan, but I just, you know, the showmanship, the theatrics, the woo! You know, with Ric Flair, man, that was, yeah, dude, I bought into that. A hook, line, and sinker.
Dude, I consider Ric Flair the greatest professional wrestler of all time. From a work standpoint, he was the greatest ever. But when you look at mainstream, when you want to compare the two, first of all, like I said, Ric Flair is my favorite professional wrestler of all time. Hulk Hogan, though, put wrestling on the map. Or reinvigorated or reinvented pro wrestling. He was the face of pro wrestling, the length of his career, and Flair had a long career as well. Flair was kind of that working class guy, but due to the promotion that, you know, Hulk Hogan would end up at, WWF, which would become WWE, man, Hogan was the guy. You know, everybody, because of the promotion, and also due to his charisma, his look, everything, Hogan could work his ass off. More limited, definitely, than Ric Flair. Ric Flair's the greatest of all time. But it's just as far as, you know, name value, you know, you're going to go Hulk Hogan. But my favorite is Ric Flair. Both guys paved the way for guys like myself and the guys that follow behind me. And so it's kind of like a who's who contest, you know, among the boys. You know, everybody has a different favorite. You know, like I know Mick Foley, his favorite is Terry Funk. You know, Shawn Michaels, I know he's a Flair guy. I know a lot of guys, or many guys, are Hulk Hogan guys. Both definite icons of the business. Both great in their own rights. Both in the Hall of Fame, or any Hall of Fame that you could ever put. Me, I'm a fan of both guys. There's always been some controversy of like, hey, do I have heat with Hulk Hogan? No, I don't have any heat with him. I don't have anything but the utmost respect for what that guy accomplished in the business. He's an absolute legend. But when you're talking about when the bell rings, and when the bell rings again at the end of the match, I'm going to go Ric Flair. As far as global icons, Hulk Hogan, due to the promotion that he was involved in with WWF, with the marketing of Vince McMahon and that game plan, and his charisma and his look, the size, everything he presented. Dude, he was the, what was that song? The Real American. Dude, that video was premiered, done by Rick Derringer. Hulk Hogan is probably the most well-known wrestler in the history of the business. I'm a Flair guy. But I give a shout out to both guys for blazing the path for guys like me to follow. Appreciate the question, Mark Klein. Teddy, this is our last question of the evening. This is from a guy named Matt. I'm just curious to what kind of music Teddy listens to. Have you guys ever checked out Cody Jinks? Go for it, Teddy.
Dude, I have no idea who Cody Jinks is.
Goddamn, you ain't got to get on about it.
I don't even have access to my computer. I can't even tell. Now, dude, I'm a Theory of the Dead Man. Shinedown, Five Finger Death Punch. You know, that's my deal. That's who I listen to.
Dude, when'd you get into Five Finger?
Dude, I've dug that shit. I'm not terribly heavy. You know, where they're like, you know, Satan is your friend. Satan is your friend. Not as deep as that. You know, but I like Five Finger. I like Shinedown. I like Theory of the Dead Man.
Well, you answered that question.
I don't even know who that other guy was.
Hey, man, when you and I were doing those workouts at the Broken Skull Ranch way back in the day, I'd always have some kind of heavy-hitting metal, Iron Maiden, whatever.
Yeah, that shit's too heavy for me. That's not my gimmick.
You was kind of like more New Kids on the Block oriented.
You fucking take the, you can take the bass out of your voice. You can take the bass out of your voice right there. God damn it. You can call me anything but that New Kids on the Block bullshit.
Hey,
no.
Hey, dude, I remember I picked up your phone because I was going to hook it to my Bluetooth speaker and I, New Kids on the Block.
Yeah. You know. Your ass.
Dude,
your ass. You
come
saw
on, man.
Like no.
Dude.
Hey, no New Kids. No
dude,
Justin
Timberlake.
Did you
have every Britney Spears
that
album that was ever released?
No, none of that. None of that. You grab the wrong goddamn phone. You know better than that. Yeah.
Teddy.
No, dude, but some of that shit you listen to is like, you know, that shit's rough, man. That's, you know, where the lead singer's like, rah, 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 rah. Yeah, that stuff kind of unnerves me.
Dude, that was that 6 Feet Under shit when they were singing that AC/DC album. That was some good shit.
Yeah, dude, I'm a pacifist. I'm a lover, not a fighter. That doesn't bode well with me. Yeah.
Well, dude, before we go to I want you to promote Element Outdoors. But before we go to Element, how has the action been in the Boom Boom Room with the girl gone?
It's like King Tut's tomb. Yeah, nothing. I mean,
there was a question that someone had sent in what apps you're on because it used to be Piece of Fish or whatever the fuck it was.
Plenty of Fish. Plenty of Fish.
Yeah, whatever it was. Piece of Fish, Plenty of Fish, a bunch of fish. So you don't use that no more.
Smells like fish, whatever.
He's actually out in the boat catching fish with his buddy.
God damn it. Did you ask me a question? I was laughing. I'm sorry.
So you and your girl are serious?
No, dude. Dude, I'm not serious about shit other than hunting and making money and drinking Jack Daniels. Those are the big three on my list. Hunting, making money, and drinking Jack. That's it.
We got the big three out of Ted Fowler after our
yes.
conversation. Tell us about where you're going to be, where people can find you. I know you're deeply tied in with Element Outdoors. They make great camouflage. What are you guys up to, and what are you pushing next?
Dude, we're going to be shaking some stuff loose here in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to Iowa, of all places, not this Friday, but next Friday. Going to meet with the marketing people, see, you know, where we're going with that. Yeah, looking forward to the release of our, you know, Generation 2 line, which should be, you know, should be good. Dude, just trying to hunt, make money, and stay out of trouble. You know me.
Dude, what are you going to do for whitetail season this year?
Man, I got approached by a guy that basically needs some does taken off of his property, and it's a bow hunting only operation. So that, you know, that fits right into my category. And another cat up by Uvalde is, you know, he opened the door. He's like, dude, if you want to come up there and bow hunt, I got that going on for me. I was looking at going to Illinois. Of all places to go whitetail hunting, you know, looking at a 4 or 5 day trip, you know, package trip to an outfitter, you know, just to sit in a stand, just to get out, see what's going on.
Where's the location of that place?
Dude, somewhere in southeast Illinois, you know. I mean, I talked to the guy a couple of times. He shot up a flare, and it's, you know, we're still, you know, November, so I got a little ways, you know, to work that thing out, but southeast Illinois.
Man, I was reading an article. This is probably 5-6 years ago, but it was called Suburban Bucks. You know, Illinois, I always put the S in there to piss people off. Illinois, man, they got a bunch of cornfields and farming out there, and those deer are well fed. It was an article called Suburban Bucks, and it was an article about the deer that live within the city limits in these neighborhoods where there's probably, you know, 1 acre, 2, 3, 4, 5 acre, you know, home sites. Mm-hmm. And these bucks are living in these areas because they know they can't be fucked with. They won't be shot. Now, obviously, they're being, you know, pursued by people on the kayfabe. But, and just like the King of Carson there in Carson City, Nevada, the big-ass mule deer hanging around in a neighborhood, there's a lot of those bucks over there, you know, right there within the city limits of big cities in Illinois. They're just hanging out in the suburbs because they know they're safe there. But, dude, Illinois has, as you know, has great deer hunting. So, if you get a chance to get out there, it'd be awesome.
Dude, you know I'm feeding protein at my crib, you know, year round, just on the backside of the property, just on a whim, just to see them as, you know, as they, you know, as they come through. Hand to God, the other night I had 3 tens. They're ratchet heads. They're not, you know, 135s-ish, yep. But tens, you know, still in velvet. I mean, barely outside of their ears. And for Rockport, you know, I'm sitting there looking at these guys going, really? You know, I mean, not that I would fletch a deer on my own property, you know, because I, you know, they're kind of half-assed pets. But I'm looking at these guys going, man, we've really made some gains in the last couple of years, you know, over what I was seeing.
Yeah, but dude, they're just fun to see. That's the whole thing about it.
Dude, sit out on the back porch, hit a few golf balls, sit down, drink a beer, and, you know, the deer come out and they hit that feeder, and, you know, the does are with the fawns because it's that time of year, and, you know, the bucks are in velvet. Yeah, it's cool to see. I mean, I wouldn't shoot them, you know, but by the same token, everybody's goal is to shoot a deer on your own property. And looking at those guys going, yeah, but I won't.
Man, we were out there, Chris and I were at the driving range, not too far from our house in Nevada, and there were mule deer about 300 yards downrange at the driving range. And I was like, man, putting my ball on the tee, had my Callaway driver, and I was like, man, I'm going to hit one of those motherfuckers. I damn near proceeded to hit the guy that was, you know, shit, about 30 yards away from me on the same plane at the driving range. And damn near hit his ass because I shanked it so damn bad. I didn't hit any of the deer, but it was so cool to see all those deer out there. And I'm aiming for them, but I'm either hooking the fuck out of them or I'm slicing the shit out of them. I'm calling 4. But, yeah, I'm looking at those guys. I'm not trying to hit them per se.
Right. Right.
I was like, okay, let me get them out there by those big-ass mule deer. There's a good deers out there, too.
At least spook them a little bit. Hey, man, you'll be glad to know I have a golf lesson tomorrow morning at 8:30 at the country club.
Come on.
Swear to God.
What are you going to learn?
The basics of golf. No, dude, you know what? I am showtime with my irons, you know, because I got the tee box here at the house and I'm hitting 50 to 100 balls every other night. I mean, honest, you know, get out there and hit, and I'm good from my 6 iron in. I'm real happy. Dude, I pick up my driver and you would think I've never played the game before. I swear to God. I mean, yeah, it's unnerving, some of the stuff I do. And it's like, dude, uncle. Yeah, I got signed up for a lesson at the country club.
It's complete horseshit because I ain't buying this because I know you're trying to rope me into a situation.
Nope. Here you go, dude. Do you remember the guy that had the ranch down the road from us, had the white rocks leading in and the sleeveless? Okay, it's his brother-in-law. He's the pro at the Rockport Country Club.
I know, but my point is, the time when I bought that automated dartboard at the Broken Skull Ranch.
Okay, dude, I could beat you at golf, but I'm not hitting my driver very well. Okay, truth be told, I could stand to straighten up my driver a little bit.
I asked Ted if he had a dark game. He goes, well, I played a few times, and then some bitch started strumming me like a six-string guitar. I was fucking so mad. Ted, my goddamn guest at the ranch, who was beating the dog shit out of me in a game of darts. I was like, man, this motherfucker hustled the shit out of me. So I know that all you're trying to do is talk about the shitty golf game that you got, and all of a sudden I fly down there, we go play golf, you're going to beat the fuck out of me. Then I'm going to fly down with goddamn back to Los Angeles, madder than a fucking hornet, because I got worked.
Dude, I may have sandbagged you just a little bit, but as a child of God, we didn't put any money on the games.
Boy, I tell you what, I'm a sore loser to begin with, but if you want to put money on a game, forget about it.
Yeah, dude, you were not happy. You're like, fuck it, man, walk inside.
Teddy, where can people find you on social media so we can get out of this?
Dude, TedValor361 on Twitter and Instagram.
Thanks for being on the show. Good talking with you.
All right, dude.
Catch you down the road.
Recently on The Producer's Guide.
Why are they letting you make these movies?
Check out Todd Garner's interviews with Rob Riggle.
Semper Fi's Marine Corps motto, Semper Gumby, should be the producer. Always flexible.
Marlon Wayans.
My dad's not funny. He's really annoying. My mom curses him out, and that's when we found out comedy.
And Eli Roth.
I liked 16 Candles and Ferris Bueller, but I was waiting for the nudity. I hated those movies. I thought it was the death of cinema.
The Producer's Guide with Todd Garner. Every Thursday on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. Remember to rate and review.
All right, everybody, give me the go-home cue. It's time to wrap up this podcast and ride off in the sunset. Before I do that, I want to thank my buddy Ted Fowler, 361, for coming on the show. Always good to sit there and chat with him and catch up with what's going on down there in Ted Fowler's life and the South Texas region. If you want to check out Ted's camouflage stuff that he's involved in, check out elementoutdoors.com. They make some real good patterns, good stuff. ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin has all my Broken Skull Ranch shirts. We have been meaning to come out with some Nevada designs and have not done so yet. I'm going to get on that ASAP. And El Segundo Brewing Company just brewed up a brand new batch of the best IPA in the United States of America, Broken Skull IPA. Handcrafted, concocted, formulated by yours truly and Rob Croxall to my specific taste buds. This is an awesome IPA, and I will leave it at that. You must try it if you have not. Check it out. You can find it at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in Southern California. If you ain't in Cali, you're shit out of luck. Go by the brewery, try to scrape up a bottle, a growler, anything. But this is an IPA which must be tried. It's that damn good. Other day, I was at a hotel. I was taking a shower. I got all wet. I grabbed the soap. It was in one of those wrappers, one of those plastic wrappers. And my fingers were already wet. I was sitting there trying to squeeze the soap out of that plastic wrapper. I kept squeezing. The soap was wet. The container was wet. That damn little tough-ass bag was wet. I used my teeth to try to pry open the bag. Nothing doing. I was like, holy shit, how weak can you be not to be able to open this wrapper of soap in this hotel room you're staying at? So I got out of the shower, buck-ass naked, walked over to my damn Broken Skull pocket knife, opened it up, cut open the bag of the soap, and then walked back in the shower and finished my shower with some soap. That's the kind of horseshit reasons you always should have a pocket knife with you. And yes, that's a true damn story. I couldn't open up the wrapper because my fingers were wet. It was embarrassing, but since I had my Broken Skull knife, I got clean. You can find my Broken Skull knife and my Working Man knife from Cold Steel on Amazon. Amazon's got the best price on both knives. Just go to amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin, and that's the bottom line. I want to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show, especially DDP Yoga, betonline.ag, TrueCar, Geico, and Hyundai USA. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. Please support them because they support us. If you need more info on my sponsors, check out the show description to this episode for details. Folks, I'm on Twitter and Instagram, at SteveAustinBSR. Follow me on Instagram. I'll be posting a lot of pictures from my hunt up there in Nevada as I'm chasing antelope. Folks, until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.